satisfy you.
Welcome to Notcast, episode 362, Subtimber. I'm Saverin.
I'm Fuzzwolf.
And I'm Shiva.
And we are outside again at Shiva's place on her patio outside, so you can probably hear the plane above us. You'll hear the burble of the hookah. But it's like 70 degrees, the skeeters have mostly fucked off, and it's a glorious fall evening here in North Texas. It has been 2 weeks. Have gone to MFM and returned. Yes. And didn't get blown away by the rain, though you did have some adventures with that on the road.
Yes. I didn't.
Fuck you didn't, because you flew.
It fucked Sarah, who left later the same day as I did, and got there in 8 hours.
Aw, poor Fuzz.
It took me 14 and a half hours.
It normally takes 7, 8, depending seven on traffic and stuff.
It's not even that far.
Yeah. Ajax and I drove to work the table and attend the con, and at some point what it looked like from Twitter was the White River had risen, crested the bank, or it got too close to the I-40 bridge. There was a couple of wrecks on I-40, so they just closed I-40 in Arkansas for a good stretch, and
that's kind of the major road.
I was talking to Noxine Glar, and they left about an hour before I did, at like 5:15 in the morning. And they were only waiting for less than 10 minutes. I left at like 6, because my thought was, let's leave early and we'll beat the Dallas morning rush hour out of town.
And you did.
And I did, yeah. And it was a good plan. But, you know, you can't control nature. So we hit that point where they closed the road. We probably sat there for like 3 or 4 hours. Sat, moved a little. And then, of course, when they closed the roads, everybody has to get off on this same exit. So the little state highway that everybody exited on was backed up and super slow because everybody had to be pushed onto
it. Yeah, it's a county road. It's not designed to carry freeway traffic.
Yeah. And I swear, every semi in the country was between me and MFM this year. The roads are just absolutely... You smug jackass. You flew. You could have looked out your window on the airplane and been like, I am above all of this shit.
Well, I also traveled on Friday, and you guys traveled on Thursday. We ended up leaving.
Sarah worked most of a day, I guess, or half a day or something like that on Thursday.
He left at like 3.
And he left at like 3, and he got there at 11. As soon as, I think it was Rama came by our table and told us that. And both Ajax and I were like, well, fuck Sarah then.
How this dare chick. He get there in a reasonable time frame?
I know. He should suffer like we did.
We ended up leaving at like 3 on Sunday because the bed we ended up with was just hard and I was just aching. We had 2 really awful nights sleep. The idea of a third night on that was just like, ugh. So we just ended up, we looked at each other, do you want to just leave tonight instead of tomorrow morning? Yeah.
Did you drive straight through?
Yeah. So we left at around 3 on Sunday, got home probably around 11 on Sunday night. So.
And then you got to enjoy all of the Labor Day holiday.
Mm-hmm.
Our Labor Day wasn't too bad. We left probably around 10 or 9. I don't remember.
That's usually when we left in the past.
But we got home at like 3:30, 4 in the afternoon. I don't remember exactly. And that was fine. And oh man, I got home and I just collapsed. I was exhausted. Not really from the drive so much. I guess it was just
it's a long weekend.
The busy weekend is over. I'm going to just... So I went and took a nap, and I slept till like 10 that night, I think. I slept straight through dinner and everything, and then I got up. So I was a little tired on Tuesday, I guess.
But, does NFM have anything on Monday?
No. Okay. It's a 3-day con.
It's very much packed up.
They have like a mixer and a couple of panels on Thursday, but not a whole lot. And they pack everything up.
Oh man, just think if it ever got big enough, it could be a 5-day hell convention. Thursday through Monday.
Oh God. So I'm looking.
I don't think Meffitt's at the danger of doing that.
Oh no. But like PAX West is a 4-day, 5-day event now.
Worldcon is a 5-day event. So I'm looking at doing Worldcon again next year. I'm going to apply for dealer's tables there. Because I may have mentioned this before, but it's in San Jose. I know a lot of the writers I've published are out in that area. And another one from further north will be coming down for it. So I'm like, if I get a couple tables out there, I can have a place for authors to come and do signings, and they can tweet about it, maybe get a little traffic to our table that way. Plus, they'll be on panels and stuff like that. Maybe I should see if I can get on a panel or something. It's apparently like mainstream sci-fi, like getting on panels is a good way to kind of get your name out there and everything.
Especially if you're trying to bump Argyle.
Mm-hmm. On the topic of Argyle Productions, which is the actual name of my company. I have a DBA, it's for Planet. 10 years ago this month,
wow,
I filed the paperwork for Argyle Productions. So I've been in business as a small business person for 10 years now. That's pretty cool.
I didn't know you started that right before Fiesta, as being like the...
We officially took over for Planet in March of 2008. So it would have been like right in that time frame.
Yeah, that's
as well. Yeah.
That's about when what would become Fiesta Incorporated.
Yeah. So like, and it was also when I started my current job. So I got my 10-year at company plaque today, and I get to pick a 10-year anniversary gift.
A goodie.
Yes, a goodie, which I'm still deciding on because I just got the login stuff for it today. But it's sort of, I'm not doing like a big 10-year thing right now because we didn't own Fort Planet until March of 2008. So
March you'll have a...
That gives us a little more time. And it won't be the 10th anniversary of Fort Planet because Fort Planet's been around longer than that. But we do want to do something special for 10 years of me and Tyrion and company, you know, running.
Mm-hmm.
Running a joint. But yeah, I'm just sort of reflecting on that most small businesses, you either, if you're gonna fail, you often do it within the first 5 years, and a lot of businesses do fold within that 5 years. And in small press publishing, quite a few small press publishers, even some older established ones, have gone under in recent years. So 10 years as a small press publisher is actually pretty good. So I'm pretty happy with all that we've done in 10 years and how far my company has grown in that time.
All the porn you've published.
Not to break my arm patting myself on the back, but it's
still an accomplishment, man.
I mean,
yeah, you can tell I've been shamed into not feeling proud of myself as a child, but yeah, I think I deserve to feel a little bit happy that we're here after 10 years and still putting out a shitload of books, and hell, actually expanding with our recent steps into actual sci-fi fantasy publishing.
Mm-hmm.
With putting out Ursula Vernon's books. So we've already put out The Raven and the Reindeer. That came out at the end of July. And I've got two more books from her that she's done as ebooks, but she doesn't have print edition of yet.
Yeah. And you'll solve that issue for her?
I will, yes. Bryony and Roses, which is a retelling of Beauty and the Beast.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of her T. Kingfisher work is a pseudonym she uses. Or like she does like retellings of fairy tales and myths and stuff like that. And the other one that I'm really looking forward to getting out there is Jackalope Wives and Other Stories, which is a collection of her shorter works all put in one book. Mm-hmm. And Jackalope Wives won the Nebula Award. And this book also contains The Tomato Thief, or Tomato Thief, which just won the Hugo Award for Best Novelette.
Neat.
And so she's got readers asking already, like, hey, can I get Tomato Thief in print anywhere? So I'm working on getting that out there now. I'm actually waiting on a proof copy to arrive so that I can
once over it.
I can once over it before making it live on Amazon. So I'm pretty happy about those developments. We'll be looking to do some other stuff too. So yeah, shit's looking pretty good. And oh man, we're planning our panel at Midwest, Midwest Fur Fest. Like, I'm not going to it, but Tieran will be there. And we're already seeing about putting together a Fur Planet / Argyle Presents panel, where we'll have authors doing some readings and stuff like that, because Kyle will have a new book out by then also that we'll be publishing.
That's cool.
So yeah, lots going on in my publishing life. Sorry if that was a distract. I feel like I always come back to, like, books and publishing and nerdity.
Hey, it's what you do, man. It's a big chunk of your life.
Yeah, it's what I'm passionate about, and man, if I could give up that day job, I feel like I could do so much more with Argyle. Like, I could spend more time on it and, like, do more advertising and, you know, actually, like, read novel submissions and stuff like that. That'd be nice.
So what you're saying is you need to start a Fur Planet Patreon to help make it be your full-time job.
Yeah, it was funny. We talked about that the other day, and I was like, I don't know about a publishing company having a Patreon. That sounds odd.
Well, you put out for, like, a monthly whatever?
Well, here's the thing. I looked into it. I actually did a search on this, and I found, like, from a simple Google search, like, 5 or 6 small presses that have a Patreon. And it's like, patrons at certain levels get, like, a discount code for your store. Or you'll get, like, advanced notice of stuff. Some companies do, like, free stories to patrons and stuff like that. Which, that's the kind of thing I could do. I could, like, I could pay an author for a short story or something like that, post it to the Patreon feed and such. So it's an idea I'm thinking of. I mean, and it's there's also, like, some companies do subscriptions where they're like, pay as X amount per year or whatever, and, you know, you get your books sent to you automatically. I don't know if logistically I have enough time to handle that, but it's something that some of the larger small presses do.
Well, if your theoretical Patreon got to the point where it could supplant your full-time job,
yeah,
Fur Planet could be your full-time job.
Yeah, and I mean, and I'd be willing to take a pay cut to do it, because, I mean, it's not, it's, you know, we all know publishing is not like a massive income generator. You know, you're not going to get rich off of publishing, you know, unless you're the one in a million that hits it big as a writer. As a publisher, you have a much smaller chance of making that happen. Especially since all of our contracts are, like, non-exclusive, and we only license the rights we're going to use. Print rights for Ursula's books, or we'll do print and ebook if we're handling the ebook edition and stuff like that. Or, like, the case of Summerhill, we picked up the audio rights because we did the audiobook edition of it. But, like, if any of these books, like, really took off and got optioned to be a film or a TV series or anything, we wouldn't make a dime out of any of that. So, you know, our contracts are very author favorable. So I'm not looking to, like, get rich off of it. But yeah, if the patron just covered, like, my basics or something like that and allowed me to live an okay life and do what I want to do. This isn't anything I'm doing, like, imminently or anything like that. It was just, like, an idea that popped up while Saverin and I were having lunch the other day.
Yep. But it's an idea.
It's an idea that seems to have some merit. So it's
certainly a possibility in the current day and age.
Yeah. And, like, I found an article that was written earlier this year, and it was kind of like, is Patreon the future of publishing or something like that, so...
It certainly empowered a lot of independent artists to do a lot more work.
Yeah. Patreon and Kickstarter made it very possible. Actually, Soap Wolf just finished up a Kickstarter for another one of Ursula Vernon's books called Summer in Orcus. They raised $30,000 via Kickstarter. So that'll, I mean, allow them to pay the artist that they had to the cover and interior art. It'll pay for the print run. And it'll pay for all the extra goodies that, you know, if they do, like, the higher-end stretch goals and stuff like that. Some of the stretch goals are, like, people get art prints and stuff like that. So, you know, there's definitely an appetite out there for good, you know, good science fiction fantasy. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's the if the market will bear, it's worth a try.
By the way, I added The Raven and the Reindeer to For Planet. And, like, I had to, because we also had it at MFM this weekend. It's like, you know, it is a transformation story, and it has talking animals in it. So it's like, yeah, I'll add this to Fur Planet. This could totally be of interest to furries.
I could see that.
Yeah. And I made sure to note that on the website, you know, has TF and talking animals in it. Because it's not a traditionally furry book cover, so I wanted to put on there that, hey, this has shit that you might be interested in.
Yeah, it's got the talking animals and all that.
Yeah. We know y'all like that, right? It also has a lesbian romance.
Yeah. That's in my wheelhouse.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to do more lesbian romances. Which I guess we're doing a whole anthology of for next year.
Step in the right direction. You gotta start somewhere.
Uh-huh.
So... I went to Six Flags. So Six Flags was doing a flash sale on their season passes. Where it's like,
don't you mean Five Flags?
No. Six Flags, they were doing a flash sale on their season passes. $65 for a season pass when a single day pass is $75 now. And parking is $25. So you can get just the regular season pass with included parking, and it also works for Hurricane Harbor and its parking. For $65. Or you could totally do, they also have their like premium meal pass or whatever. It was a further like $83. But you get the free refills all season long for 2018 and the remainder 2017. And you get two meals from the restaurants and one quote snack, which is like nachos or
turkey leg.
No, turkey legs are meals, but they do have turkey legs. Because I did eat a turkey leg while I was there.
Turkey legs are amazing.
Funnel cakes count as a snack. And I'm making quotation fingers here, because funnel cakes are delicious.
Funnel snakes. Funnel snakes are... That's what they have in Australia, snakes.
Yeah.
But the funnel cakes count as, quote, snacks. So you can go there, get two meals and a snack, and... They say, it'll pay for itself in three visits. And I'm like, it's already paid for itself. It's almost paid for itself as it is.
That's a hell of a deal.
Yeah. So it was all 2018 and what's left of this year?
Yeah. So the whole thing cost me $165. And pretty much, if I had done everything I did that one day, it would have cost me about that much. Because, like, the purple bottle...
And three felonies.
No. Well, because the purple bottle, they're selling them for $20, and it's, you know, you can only buy them before the end of the year, so you get the free refills for the thing. Or they have.
I don't know if that was his nose or if Bo just like stealth licked me and ran away.
Oh, it's much of a muchness. I mean, it's like,
it is a mystery.
It was it cold or was it warm?
Cold.
Nose. That was nose.
Okay. Well, it's either that or slobbery ball in his.
Now that might have been, but it was so, probably
excuse
nice.
Excuse me a moment.
In addition to being outside, we also have
Doggo,
the ship out here. So he is...
Because it is September.
Yep. September, Sniptember, Snake Timber.
September.
But Six Flags-wise, I got in, was there for like 6 hours or so, but I got to ride the new Joker Ride roller coaster, which is a freely rotating short roller coaster in the footprint of old Flashback. The train for this is shaped like an H.
Okay.
Okay.
Where each of the four legs rotates freely. Mm-hmm. It basically can do a full 360 forward rotation or back rotation. And how violent the ride is based on the weight in the cart. So, there was a...
Oh, man, we'll go together. It'll be like, fuck my shit up.
Yeah, we'll just do, like, it'll be nothing but flips. Like, I got four full rotations at least in this, like, less than a minute ride. Almost lost my glasses. Like, they kind of flew up a little bit and I grabbed them.
Yeah, when I went to Six Flags, I went on one ride and said, okay, we need to find a thing where I can get something to hold on to my glasses.
They have... In the Gotham City section, where they've got the Mr. Freeze and the Batman, they added the Joker, they added a, like, Catwoman's Whiplash. It's like the Spinnaker. If you remember that one, it's a high-speed fan-type ride,
mm-hmm.
where basically it goes vertical, and you're spinning upside down vertically. The Riddler's Revenge or whatever, but it wasn't running that day. Because it was the same weekend that we were having our fuel scare, so people were not showing up at the park as much, and I guess...
Oh, what a pity. You only have 15 months to,
oh,
to
I know.
Try and get it.
But,
yeah.
It's like, a lot of the stuff in certain sections of the park were shut down, too, because they were, like, shorthanded that day.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the Old South area, which...
Doesn't... Sorry, I misspoke. 16 months. I forgot it's still early.
Yeah, and so there was, like, some shops and stuff that were closed in the area near, like, that theater in Runaway Mountain. But everything else was pretty much open. I walked on to a bunch of rides, because I rode most of the roller coasters. The thing that I waited the longest for was the Superman Tower ride, the one that shoots you way up high and then bounces you a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot of fun. I had to wait, like, 5 minutes, maybe.
Wow.
The longest I waited was the Giant, Texas Giant. Got in, rode it, lots of fun. But for the Titan, I literally walked on.
Hmm.
So, it seemed like the distribution of people in the park was kind of weird. There wasn't as many teens. There was families with young kids, but...
They don't take them on the big-ass roller
No, they
coasters.
Don't. So, it worked out real well for me. But I had a lot of fun, and, yeah, I totally got my money's worth... almost just this one visit. And so next time I go, it's like, oh, if I go in the morning and eat my two meals and whatever while I'm at the park and don't leave for the day, I would have theoretically spent way more than $165 at this point.
That's awesome.
But yeah, it's good for the rest of this year, so I can go for the remaining weekends this month. I can go during Fright Fest and go during Holiday in the Park, which is a really fun time to do it. And then, of course, all of next year.
Holiday in the park. Oh, the war on Christmas continues.
Please don't break my hookah hose.
Yeah.
That is not something to break over your knee in frustration.
Yeah. The war on Christmas at Six Flags. Just like we have the war on the Confederate flag.
They almost pulled down the Lee statue in Dallas. Almost.
Almost. Yeah, they are basically like voted 13-1. To do it, and some dude, Sons of the Confederacy, with his name's like Hiram something like that, so
mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, it's like the dude named Beauregard. You're probably an old racist.
Hiram Beauregard, slave owner the fourth. I'm
yeah.
proud of my family heritage.
Well, in that article, in the Dallas Morning News article, there was literally a guy whose comment to the city council was the wrong side won the war.
Yeah, I saw that comment.
They were in the process of removing it, and they got an injunction. So the only thing that's changed, this statue's coming down. Either the city's going to do it, or the people will help them do it, or it might happen by the time Pride rolls around, because
mm-hmm.
that's the park where they have Pride. And... it's going to happen, and the only thing that this guy's injunction has only ensured that there's going to be protest and possibly violence around the removal.
I wonder if they were trying to do that before Pride and, like, the noise that goes on during it.
Well, they had bumped it up because they had initially done the...
Initially, the mayor said there was going to be something like a...
In October?
Like a 21-day, like, review period or something like that. But then the city council, I guess, overrode him and was like, fuck it, we're going to do it now. And there was so many people waiting to speak that they had to limit them to, like, 1 minute each
yeah.
to say their piece.
Most people are like, yeah, let's get rid of this. It's not good to be here. Lee Park, Oaklawn Park, mm-hmm. is the site of a lot of, like, festivals and shit. It's the Pride Parade. It's in Oaklawn, which is the gayborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. And again, like... Lee Park. I'd never made that connection.
It was only named Lee Park when they put the statue up in, like, was it the 20s or the 60s?
I'm not sure. I'd have to look that up. But
it was like Oaklawn Park before that. Yeah.
I'd never noticed it, really. And this is one of those, look, here's white blindness, right?
Yeah.
I noticed it while going from the car dealership that was right there. And I was like, wait a tick. Robert E. Oh, man, really? It's like, man, I've been to that park a bunch of times and never noticed.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's good that the city's trying to do something, and not so good that Hiram, old racist face, is trying to keep his statue of Lee and some corporal or something walking behind his horse.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whatever, dude. But it's a really hefty, big statue. It needs to come down, and so too do the rest of the Confederate monuments, especially the one in, like, Oak Cliff.
Yeah, that's a big fuck
that
you.
That one is a giant fuck you, because
to the African American community
is an African American side of town, and
it's put like there. Having one in Deep Ellum or something.
Yeah,
it'd just be fucking
or
horrible.
You know, insert horrible thing here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, oh, what's this statue of Hitler in this Jewish side of town? You know. A statue to Kim Jong-un in Korean area.
See that?
I mean, in Carrollton?
Yeah, I was trying to remember the road name. Old Denton and the Bush.
Yeah,
you know,
that
are, Super
Trinity
H. Mar. Trinity Mills and all that, where all the delicious Korean and Asian food is. I still want to go down there and spend a day just going to the cafes and eating stuff.
That's something I really like about Dallas, is that, like, it's a very multicultural city. It's also a very beautiful city. We have a great skyline. Downtown is really neat, and we have all these neat little neighborhoods and stuff. And you know, at some point in the past, you know, a bunch of assholes got all these Confederate monuments put up, and it's sort of like, you know, Dallas is truly a 21st century city. We need to get rid of this shit. And the mayor's being real good about, like, actually trying to put that forward. Our mayor's actually, not our mayor, sorry. I guess our mayor is Carrollton's mayor. The Dallas mayor, he's very proactive about a lot of shit. You know, like, he was totally like, refugees are welcome here, when, you know, the Syrian refugees were trying to take them in and stuff like that. Yeah, this is a good move for this city. It really doesn't fit what Dallas is now and the personality of the city to have this old racist shit hanging around.
And we look at, like, Houston, and we brought this up before, that Houston accepts, like, 12% of all refugees that come to the country. It's an incredibly multicultural area. And,
Yeah, it's
kind of a big deal, because lots of shit comes through Houston and whatnot to get to us.
And also, like, a lot of the people that were drowned out of their homes by Katrina in New Orleans ended up settling in Houston, because they bussed tons of people in and been like, they were sheltering in Houston, and now Houston's been nailed by this fucking hurricane.
Bunch of them probably came up here.
I mean, how shitty would that be?
But it's good that our mayor is recognizing that, you know, actually, it's not just a bunch of old white people here in Dallas anymore. It's good that they're kind of like, yeah, actually, we've seen what happens when there's, like, big protests and whatnot, and a bunch of cities have removed a bunch of statues, and they're still coming down. And they will continue to come down.
I'm really glad that was the reaction to Charlottesville.
Yeah.
Somebody being killed by some fucking white supremacist has been a catalyst for a bunch of places saying, you know what, fuck this shit, it's well past time, let's get rid of this garbage.
Yeah. Like, you guys can put it in the Loser Museum next to the Nazi flags and uniforms.
Well, I mean, yeah, put it in any history museum or something. I mean, this isn't about erasing history. It's about not venerating the traitors and losers.
In public spaces.
In public spaces.
Largely near African-American communities.
You know, the one Confederate flag that I think should stick around is there's a some sort of memorial, not memorial, but there's some sort of public exhibit that shows, it's like a mural or something like that, of all the governments that have controlled Texas at some point. So, you know, you have the I think it's the Spanish, Mexico,
France briefly,
the Republic of Texas flag, the Confederate flag, the United States flag.
Yeah, the six flags.
But that's sort of like, that's showing the history of Texas in its larger the larger picture there.
And that's even then, the flag of the CSA was not the stars and bars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was its own thing. The stars and bars is the racist-ass flag used by racists that really saw its resurgence during the civil rights era as a flag.
Yeah, and that's the thing a lot of people don't want to realize. They're like, this is heritage from 150 years ago. It isn't. It's from the 20s and the 60s, between Jim Crow era and the civil rights era. And especially during the civil rights era, all this shit was put up as a fuck you to black people that were trying to get rights. So fuck that shit. Well, you guys pretty much know where we stand.
Yeah, we've talked about this a lot because we feel strongly on it.
Yeah.
And it's current events for us.
It's a current event in our city. Yeah.
And yeah, there were some protesters on both sides, but I think, and I know, I'm not going to think, I'm going to know, that the likelihood of violence happening because of the injunction is way, way, way up. And that's going to suck. Because this could have been handled, but you know what? It's going to happen. Hopefully, the city will see the... If violence occurs, the city will be like, fuck, and just get rid of the rest without any further comment.
Yeah.
Because this is what's going to happen, unfortunately. There's going to be some dumb motherfuckers that running out there with their flags, throwing up hands. There's going to be... It's not going to go well.
Yeah. You know,
the discourse on this that, hey, the Confederacy was bad, actually, is surprisingly still rather rather sharp somehow in the year of our Lord 2017.
It's kind of funny when, like, white supremacists tell black people to get over slavery, and it's like they're still not over losing the Civil War from the 1860s. It's like, bitch, please.
Yeah. So, moving on to further stuff, Furfinity is theoretically banning Nazis.
That's good.
Yeah.
They've made a change. They've put to their AUP or whatever. They've made a statement.
We'll see what they do with it.
Yeah, when I actually see shitheads starting to get banned, then that'll carry more weight. But
yeah, it's one of those, okay, cool, you made the statement, and there's... I have to say that there was a really great amount of people that you could be like, oh, these people I can block on FA, going through the comments there.
Yeah.
And being like, harvest that name, harvest that name, harvest that name. Oh, they're okay. Oh, this person. Oh, it's a circle and a MAGA hat. Okay. Grab them for the list.
It's late in the year, but it's a fine time for harvesting, I guess.
Yep. Harvesting the name for the block list. I ain't never gonna deal with these people. They can't look at my non-existent stuff that I post. But hey, don't have to deal with them. It's all about curating your spaces, folks. Block lists can be real useful, especially when you have stuff go viral a couple times and the people that want to be shitheads to you can't. Actually, like, I had a thing where somebody had to, like, literally make an account to tweet at me.
What?
And he had blocked their primary account, so they made a burner account.
So I was just like...
To yell at you?
Yeah, I was just like, lol, blocked. Furfinity gets a point, one. Now they have to actually follow through with what they said and get these people and their art off the site and make it a space that doesn't allow Nazi furs. That's good. And if you guys expected us to think otherwise about it, you are sorely mistaken.
I think by now that they would, you know.
Yep. See what else. I have been reading Crash Override by Zoe Quinn. I am 58% through the book as of this day, and holy shit. So, Zoe Quinn, the unfortunate victim in the core of what became Gamergate, which spawned the alt-right as we know it today. It's her first-person account of the harassment and death threats and bullshit flung her way back in August of 2014, and how she's trying to help other people counter harassment that in a similar vein to hers. Like, I'm only 58% through the book because, A, well, reading it on your Kindle is really nice, and it's syncing between your phone and the Amazon Cloud Reader and all that stuff's really nice, but it's like you're reading this shit and you have to take breaks because it's pissing you off. It's like, holy shit, this is really bad. But it's interesting because I was around on 4chan when this stuff was happening. I never did anything about it either way, but it was one of those things that I saw happen. But it's harassment on the internet. You're not thinking about it. It's not affecting you. It's white man blindness. And then reading it from the perspective of the person in the center of the harassment is like, ah, oh, fuck. You know,
it's this
like,
is no bueno.
I've had that a lot, it feels, in the last year or so. The ah, oh, fuck. When you realize that, wow, I didn't see this shit happening right under my nose. And, of course, the solution is to recognize that and try to do better. But it's been, like, a kind of harrowing read because you're like, holy shit, these people
are awful.
Just how far they went. And, like, calling up her dad and calling up all of her friends and, like, costing her boyfriend at the time jobs because they would just find out, oh, this guy's got a job working here and we're gonna brigade whatever indie company that he might have had a job with so that they make him too radioactive to touch, you know? And just, it's wild the amount. This whole fucking thing spawned off an abusive ex-boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the whole thing. Like, you can, it's, this kind of harassment has existed for a long ass time, but it's really fucked up that the whole flashpoint for basically what evolved into the alt-right today was spawned off an abusive boyfriend doxing his ex.
That's shitty.
That's really fucked up. I mean, doxing your ex and shit, it's really fucked up. But the fact that it's done so much damage and we're seeing the effects of it today is pretty surprising. But not really, in a way. It's like, yeah, this is kind of where it goes. It's like, we've gone from abusing individual people to classes of people.
It's not just, the thing is, it becomes you don't just do them, you go after their friends, their family, everybody around them. You cause as much collateral damage as you can as a revenge against this one person.
Yeah, for just ridiculous bullshit.
Yeah.
So, that has been an interesting read. And, of course, you know, if you go on Amazon, I'm sure there's a bunch of reviews, people calling it fake news or whatever, but that's just kind of how it is. I mean, I don't say that as, like, it's kind of about a sad resignation, because there's going to be these dipshits that hold this torch forever, and they'll be, like, 50 years old and calling women bitches on the internet. And mad because they're still virgins. It's fucked up. So you can read an excerpt on Amazon, or you might check it out. Or it might be go to a library, I don't know. If anything, it is a first-person perspective of how getting mega-docs like this plays out on a person. And why that should make it so, like, wow, you should never participate in this kind of doxing and combined harassment campaigns. So that has been my read of the week. I'm working my way through it, but I'll probably make like a little, I'll make a book report on it, post it to Patreon or something. Be like, all right, so this is what I've read, and this is why you should probably check this out, and this is why this, holy shit, don't do this. What else you got, Fuzz? Because I got a whole list of shit to talk about, but I don't want to like dominate the conversation too much.
Oh, okay.
Well, I actually watched two interesting shows recently. I watched Helsing, or Van Helsing. It's, I think it's coming up on season 2, is about to come out. It's,
the Netflix original, nothing to do with Hugh Jackman as a sexy werewolf.
Yeah. It's actually really, really good.
But does it have a sexy werewolf?
No, they've got, like, zombie vampires.
Pout.
And it was actually surprisingly good. They did some things with characters I wasn't expecting. Mm. They're not afraid to kill people off.
Is this written by George R. R. Martin then?
No, but it's very much, you know, people are expendable. And there's been some neat twists. And all else, it's decently filmed, not too hokey. And I'm looking forward to season two. I also started reading, watching a series called Midnight Texas.
I've heard of it, but I don't know anything about it.
It's ongoing. It's written, I guess, by the same person who wrote True Blood.
Okay.
Like, not the go-off-the-rails crazy adaptation of True Blood.
But this is Charlene, the person who wrote the novels? Okay.
Charlene Harris. And it's a... You start out by basically this fortune teller running from somebody, gets advice to go to this little town in Texas, which is full of all kinds of weird folks, and Midnight Texas, and it's kind of everything that's going on there. And so far, it's really good. I mean, it's not the most brilliant series. It's not like Game of Thrones or Westworld good, but it's really decent. And I'm looking forward to seeing where they take the series. But it's kind of right out the gate, it's not like, oh, there's maybe something a little weird going on. No, right out the gate, it's all weird shit. They don't make any kind of, like, soft, you know, moving into something like, oh, maybe that guy's a little weird, or there's something off about that person. No. Mm-hmm. Right out the gate. You're running into the town freaks, and they're kind of unabashedly weird. So, they're both good. I recommend both as something to watch. Mm. As for what I've been reading, it's sequels, so unless you're familiar with the prior books, it's not going to be all that edumacational.
What are you reading? What series?
Right now it's the Shadow Campaign. The author is Django, like the movie, Wexler. And it's kind of an unusual fantasy series.
Mm-hmm.
It is different planet, different world, everything else like that. But the era is kind of Napoleonic level of technology. So you've got muskets, you've got cannons, you know, you've got all that. There is some magic and such going around, but at least as far as technology level, it's fairly unusual to see. Whoever is writing a series is obviously a Napoleonic warfare buff.
Mm-hmm.
Then they add on a bunch of, a little bit of fantasy going on. There's something weird and, you know, hey, there's hints of things that are not quite strict. Historical level of, you know, there's demons and some magic.
Mm-hmm.
But there's enough... This is someone who is fairly familiar with that time period and is leveraging that a lot.
Yeah.
For this book. But, you know, you don't see that kind of level of technology either. It's like pure medieval, or you have like the more modern like urban fantasy where it's present day, whatever. I like the world because it's different. Mm-hmm. It's very different than what I usually end up reading.
Sort of predictably, I'm between two readings right now. I'm reading Ursula Vernon. I think she's becoming my new literary obsession. Like, I want to read more of her stuff, which is really handy because I'm publishing her. So that comes in useful. And I'm also still reading that Kim Stanley Robinson book, New York 2140, that is like this 600-page monster. And I'm a little over a third of a way through it. Unfortunately, I got it in hardback. And it's massive, so like it doesn't really lend itself to me taking it on the train on the days I go to work on the train. So I've had a few days where I haven't been reading it lately because I've been busy in the evenings too. But yeah, I need to continue reading that. I think I talked about that a little bit.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah.
But and that's
what it is neat.
And I like hardcovers, but I've gotten so used to just being able to read it off my Kindle. Even my Die Hard series that I've bought physical copies for like the last I don't know how many. I'm finding that I'm leaning more towards buying the Kindle edition.
Yeah.
Just so I don't have to lug around a hardcover.
Yeah. Like
Brandon Sanderson's new one is coming up, and they're like, they're really thick books. They're probably about 2 inches thick in hardcover. They're not small books. So it's like, I might just do both, get the hardcover to have it, and I've been debating buying the previous two in Kindle just so I can take it with me and reread before.
Yeah.
Because Stormlight Archive is the name of that particular series.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I really should reread it before the next one comes out.
I considered buying New York 2140 in Kindle as well, so that I could read it on the go. But, like, I paid $18 for the hardcover, and the Kindle copy's $15. So I'm like, I don't feel like paying, like, 80% of the price again.
I really wish that when they would have something like, okay, you buy the hardcover, upgrade to, like they do for Audible.
Yeah.
You like the hardcover? Here for, like, I don't know, however many dollars more you can add on the Kindle version with it. So you can get both, because I would happily do both, but I'm not, you know, I'm talking about doing this both for this one series, but overall, I'd buy the physical copy, but I want the portability of the Kindle.
Yeah, that's what happened with me, because I went to Barnes & Noble and was going to pick up the physical hardcover, but, like, the physical hardcover was $27, and I'm like, ooh, and I'm like, all right, we'll look at Amazon, that's $16, oh, right, and I bought it on Amazon, then I realized, wait a minute, I've got a fucking Kindle that Panther got me as a gift, and I was like, wait a minute, cancel order, buy on Kindle, download to device, begin reading.
Yeah, because he's like, oh, I can shop, I don't have to wait for 2 days for it to get to me, or in the case of, like, pre-orders, it arrives day of. I can just buy it, and oh, look, I'm reading.
Yeah, and that worked out really well, because I got one of the...
You have a Kindle Voyage.
Kindle Voyage.
I know, because you mentioned it when you first got it, and I was like, that's the same one I've got.
Okay.
We've got, like, 3 Kindles. We don't use any of them. We all read off our phones. Or tablets.
It is nice that it syncs across all 3.
The thing I like about the Kindle Voyage over reading on the tablet is it's not backlit, it's frontlit.
True.
So it's a much less of an eye strain when you're, like, reading in the evening or whatever.
Yeah.
But being able to pull out my phone and open up the app when I'm on the go somewhere and just pick up reading is a really neat thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I mentioned this on the show, but, like, I did a poll probably, like, a year ago now on the Bad Dog Books Twitter account. That was where I asked how many, what's your preferred type of thing to read ebooks on. And I think there was like 3 options where I said dedicated e-reader, you know, like a Kindle, phones or tablets. And phones won, like, well over the other options. And that makes sense, because, like, you don't always necessarily have a larger tablet on you or your dedicated Kindle, but you always have your phone on you.
Yep.
So if you're just around, whatever, you can just read whenever you want, and it's really convenient. My personal preference, because I grew up reading books, so I'm like, I still like the feel of a book, but I'll totally buy Kindle books too. So, like, I kind of do both. Some people get really militant about falling in one category or another, and I just don't see the point of that. I love books too much, or I'm like, I like having my library of print books, but I also enjoy the convenience of the Kindle occasionally, so.
And I used to be super, like, I when Kindle first comes out, I was like, read books on a device? I like the paper feel. And, like, the last couple times, I bought a hardcover, because I stopped buying softcover a long time ago. And I'm lugging around this book, because I deliberately buy bags, purses, where I can fit a hardcover book on it. That's one of the criteria for when... can I fit a hardcover novel in this?
Hashtag yes. Book lover problems.
Yes. So, when I buy, you know, because since I have to carry around medication and stuff, I started carrying a purse, which I actually detest. It's like, okay, if I'm going to carry a bag, let me carry books in it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how that was my criteria for buying. But the last couple times I bought a hardcover and I was dragging around in my bag while I was reading, it's like, man, this is really bulky.
I remember my mom, when like ebooks were first coming around, she was kind of like, oh, I don't really like that. I really like having a book. And then like, I actually, I can't remember how we got into the discussion or whatever, but she kind of expressed interest in a Kindle at one point. I bought her one for Christmas, and she started just voraciously reading books on the Kindle. Because it was like, she didn't drive, so it was, that way it was really easy. Like, she didn't have to wait to order a book online, but she could just get them right on the Kindle and start reading. So it was really convenient.
Also, it's nice because I realized I didn't have the Kindle app on my phone, so I downloaded it while I was here, and it synced. And since I logged in on the Kindle app, it also logged me into Amazon Music and re-authenticated the music I downloaded from the service. So it's like, ah, yay. Thanks, Shiva. You have good internet. So let's see, what else? HasCon is coming up. HasCon is Hasbro's attempt at doing a fandom event, but it's more of an industry event.
Oh, feel that nice, cool breeze.
It is a nice breeze. So, HasCon is in Rhode Island. It's got brand experience from your favorite brands. Come get experience with brands, fellow humans. They've got their pony stuff. They've got their Magic the Gathering. They've got Dungeons and Dragons. They've got Nerf. They've got all their brands, essentially. Transformers. And it'll be really interesting to see how this goes, because I tweeted about earlier today, they've got a lot of weird restrictions, too. No outside food or drink, and, like, their cosplay rules are really specific. Their autograph rules are, like, they can only sign official merchandise. You can't do photos with the guests. Several other things like that. To get in is over $100. If you wanted to be an artist vendor, you only could... they had quote-unquote artist tables, but you had to be an artist that already works for, like, IDW. So they got their artist list is, like, 9 people deep, and they're all people that work on the IDW comics, whereas everything else is just partner brands and whatnot. And it's really going to be interesting to see how this plays out, because I don't think it's going to do very well. I'm just guessing. I mean, they're drawing from Pony fans and Magic the Gathering fans and D&D fans, and they have their exclusive merch. But it is Hasbro, who just kind of sucks in a lot of ways, doing a industry event but bringing in the public. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Because I don't know anybody that's going, but I'm sure that there will be somebody I know that'll go into it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, no outside food or drinks, no oversized strollers, no coolers unless it's containing your medication. Just lots of weird restrictions, and I don't even know what all they're gonna do.
That's odd.
No fandom anybody. And people are like, oh, this is only the prelude to them shutting down all fandom conventions and making it try to be in-house. And I'm like, well, they're welcome to try. I don't think that they want to do that.
Yeah.
But this is Hasbro. They're good at making bad decisions. So we'll see. I'm sure that I will have much more to say on it next week. Maybe, unless it's completely neutral and boring. And it's like, well, it sure was a thing. I mean,
where was that being hosted?
It's in Rhode Island.
Hmm.
Because it's near the corporate headquarters of Hasbro, which is in Rhode Island.
Yeah.
I mean, good luck to them. I don't know if they're going to put...
I mean, they certainly have enough people in the region. It's dense enough, but I don't know any brony fan people that are going to be like, well, I'm not going to go to insert fandom convention. I'm going to go to HasCon.
Yeah.
And it's such an unimaginative name.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you might have called it something like Hasbro Trade Show, like something longer or something like that, but...
Yeah. Yeah, we can't record the panels, audio or video either. No selfie sticks. I think we've been over this like in the past. It's not too different from like a major industry panel or industry show, except it's open to the public. I guess it might turn out a bit like E3 did this year, where they had the public for the first time in what was a trade show. But we'll see.
Yeah.
It is
It sounds thing. Like it's kind of an E3 trade show kind of but experience.
For Hasbro brands. Brands.
Oh, I was just reminded of something that I do want to throw out there, in case people hadn't heard yet. But Equifax, one of the three major credit bureau reporting agencies, was hacked.
Oh, God,
all the personally identifying information, credit information for about 150 million people is now available to whatever hacker group got it. So my recommendation to everybody is to keep an eye on your credit bureau report more than you already should be. You should already keep an eye on it because you never know when identity theft might hit you. I use an app. It's available on at least Android and iPhone. I don't know about Windows or the others, called Credit Karma. You don't even have to use the app, actually.
Credit Karma is really good. I've used it, yeah, too.
They have a website, too.
Yeah.
So if you don't want to use it on the phone, you can do that. It's free. You put in your information. It's at least as secure as any of the credit reporting agencies are.
And it watches for new things to hit your account and new queries and everything else like that. I used it a lot when I was really working on my credit prior to buying the house.
Yeah, yeah.
I've kind of dropped off since we bought the house and we're kind of in a holding pattern, but...
And the nice thing about the app is that you can set it to pop up a notification for you if anything changes on your credit bureau report. So if a new account's opened and you get this pop-up and you didn't open an account, then you know, oh shit, I need to go look into that. You can see your whole credit history for free. You can get your score for free. Companies used to charge for giving you your actual FICO score, but they don't anymore. And in fact, a lot of actual credit cards will include access to your FICO as well.
I hope they have a way to eventually log in and find out if you were one of the ones impacted and got snagged.
There is apparently... So Equifax's main site was apparently difficult to get to today because it was getting slammed. So they set up another... This was on a CNN article that was later confirmed that... So the URL was probably correct. But they set up another URL... that goes to some kind of... to another system that you can enter in some of your data. And it's like your last name and the last six of your social. And it will tell you if you've been... if your shit was one of the accounts that was leaked.
Have I been pwned?
Yep.
Yeah, I haven't used that one. I just know this other one is like an actual one that the affected company put out. The really shitty thing is we don't know how long they knew about this because apparently three higher-end shareholders that worked there in the organization sold, what, $1.8 million worth of stock? Because, of course, their stock tanked as soon as this was made public. So that's insider trading.
Yeah.
So, if they knew that this had been leaked... sold their stocks.
That's some massive insider trading, and they're going to go to prison. Theoretically. Rich people don't go to jail in this country.
Siam was saying that they got hacked, like, end of July. So they've been...
What is this, the first week of September? So they've known for over a month.
Well, here's the thing. When something, a data breach like that happens, they have to sit down and... How did it happen? Did it happen inside the company? Was it through a software? So they basically have to circle their wagons, get at how many people got hit. Mm-hmm. How did it happen? Who did it happen? Was it inside? Was it outside? They have to kind of start doing...
They also have to plug the leak.
They have to plug the leak so it can't happen any further.
Yeah.
And then, so if it happened end of July, and however long it took for them to notice that it happened, plus then start doing some... gigantic scrabbling to figure out, impact. I can, just from working in a company where data, PII is a huge thing, you have to start gathering evidence from day one. And you can't announce this because you can't tip off anybody inside that might know so they can run.
Yeah.
You have to find out where, how, who, impact. before you make any kind of hint that it's happened so that you can gather data before people start scrabbling to cover their tracks. So I think a month delay with what you have to do is kind of reasonable. It sucks, just but from a data standpoint, especially if it's somebody on the inside did this, they have to gather evidence, they have to basically find a way to, you know, turn over whoever it is before they get a chance to run.
Fair enough on the month then, but if those guys knew about it and sold stock...
Yo, no, that's completely bad. I more meant the month delay between hack and telling people, because you have to...
That makes sense.
...freeze everything and start looking through logs and who had access, how did they get it, where did they get it. Was it through us? Was it through from some third party that interacts with us and use some kind of... there's all kinds of ways for companies to talk to each other through applications and things like that.
Yeah, many of them legit, of course. But, if somebody found a backdoor into one of those, APIs or whatever they're using.
Yeah, so a month is not unreasonable if you have to basically... gather evidence, because at that point the data is in the wild. There's not going to be anything you can do to improve this person or improve the situation. You can just do what you can do to nail the motherfuckers that did it.
Sounds good. Nail the motherfuckers. So that's Notcast's PSA for the week.
Fuck them. Fuck
check your notes. Check your credits report. And Shiva and I recommend Credit Karma. Do you use it also?
Yeah.
Okay.
There we go. So it was basically all your details you have on your credit report. So
up to including your driver's license in some cases.
Yeah, so I'm wondering, is there a way for you to change your driver's license number? Can you go to the state and get them to... So.
It probably depends on the state. I know I've had the same one every time I renew. They don't change it every time, at least in Texas, but yeah, I don't really know.
I wonder if they could request it. If you're one of the ones impacted, you go to the state of Texas and say, hey, my stuff got snagged in that Equifax breach. Can I get a new license with a new number? Because, yeah.
God, I just realized, I was thinking about my driver's license number. I was like, I can almost remember because I've written it down a couple of times. And then I thought, and I was like, I still remember my Florida driver's license number, which is actually longer than a Texas license number. Because if I recall, back in the day, before electronic banking, every time I got a check, I would have to write my driver's license number on the check in order to cash it. So it's actually stuck in my head, and I haven't had a Florida driver's license in over 12 years.
I learned my Social Security number because I was filling out college applications and scholarships, and I had to write that down I don't know how many times, and then it stuck.
Yep. I ended up knowing my mom's social because, like, I was handling a lot of stuff for her over the years. And it's very similar to mine because we all got ours at the same time and everything like that.
I've got a fairly, at least down in this area of the country, mine's unusual because it's a New England one.
Well, mine's an international one. Oh. Well, it's still your standard 9 digits, but by the leading digit or the leading 3 digits, they can kind of tell what area of the country it's from.
Which office issued it.
Yes. And it's different for people that come in from overseas.
Huh. Did not know that.
Yeah. It makes sense. I mean, it's an easy way to track us, I guess.
Yeah.
So I learned something interesting about terminology lately, about being an immigrant. This goes back into race again, funny enough. So people that come from certain countries and they live or work overseas, we tend to use the term expatriate.
Expat,
yeah. Like, oh, there's a big expat, there's a big Irish expat community here or whatever, you know. It turns out, though, that we refer to some people as expats and other people as immigrants.
Hmm.
And it's the people that come from Europe, from Britain, from Australia,
mm-hmm.
tend to be thought of as expats.
Mm-hmm.
But people that come from brown countries, from non-white areas, are immigrants. So, and technically, they're basically synonyms. Huh. You know, I could describe myself as an expat or an immigrant. And I used to describe myself as an expat because that was just the terminology I was familiar with. And then I found out, it was like, oh, that's kind of there's a kind of racial divide there. You don't describe someone from Syria as an expat. And that's just a cultural thing that's kind of stuck in there.
See,
another fucked up thing.
What I've also found out is really when it comes to expats,
mm-hmm.
it's what the groups tend to call themselves. Like, a lot of times I think of it, you know, the immigrants is like you're native to the country and anybody comes in as immigrants. Usually it's the communities of said people who call themselves expats.
That's true. But there's also a little more to it than that. That, like, people outside that community tend to recognize that terminology, too.
I've never run into anybody hearing that term from, like, an outside of that group. Like, usually when I've heard expats use, it's, like, Americans living over in Oz. Mm. But they're talking to other Americans living over in Oz, not to the Aussies. Or, like, usually when I hear it used here in the U.S., it's Brits talking to Brits, and they're usually talking about, you know, food and such, and traditions, and...
Yeah, yeah.
And, but it's usually, I've heard, within a given community to refer to groups of their own origin, rather than... I can't remember ever hearing, like, a U.S. person referring to the British expat.
Well, I mean, technically you could call me either. You could also call me a foreign national, which is also accurate.
Mm-hmm.
That came up initially because Tieran had to apply for a security clearance when he first got the job that he's at now. he's had the job for a long time, but like he had to put on one of the things on there was about living with a foreign national. Is like, yeah, that would be a security issue. So then they have to know, okay, well, what's your relationship with this foreign national and what country is this foreign national from? So, you know, because he wasn't familiar with all the terminology, he's like, what is your actual citizenship? Do I put United Kingdom? Do I put Scottish? And it's like, Scottish citizenship isn't actually a thing yet, .. until they break away from Britain eventually, if that ever happened. So, you know, I'm a British citizen, basically, for purposes like that. But yeah, the whole foreign national thing came up there, and it was one of those times where I kind of felt a little different. I was like, oh, my boyfriend at the time has to, like, single me out on this process because I'm a foreigner. And it just gave me a little pause for thought. I mean, it totally makes sense, but...
Pause for thought.
Yeah. And I guess because I have a job, I'm taking a job from some American.
Go back to England and have your boiled dinner. I guess. I don't know.
I'll say you're your playing haggis. The part of the dumb American. Yeah, my haggis.
We'll have your haggis and bagpipes.
Go toss a caber and a haggis, kill it and eat it.
Traditional Scottish hunting.
That's totally how we do it, right?
You fling a haggis out on the field, you try to hit it with a telephone ball.
No. this is a joke that that Scottish locals would tell the American sailors. Oh, and American sailors, by the way, are all Yanks.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter if you were born in southern Mississippi, you were a Yank.
Oh, same in Oz. All of us are Yanks.
All Americans are Yanks. So what they would tell the Yanks was that, and there's a variation on this called a snark hunt, but they would tell them to go on a haggis hunt. And basically the haggis is this little animal, and it lives at the base of a hill. so one leg is longer than the other because it's always running around the hill. And they would tell the Yanks they would have to go and hunt haggis.
Yep, snipe hunt, snark hunt.
Yep,
yeah, same thing.
Ah, fun with foreigners, I suppose.
Yep.
I imagine the pub trade was very unhappy when the American naval base there closed.
Yeah, that probably sucks for a lot of folks. Because, I mean, yo, American bases, they provide a lot of local income.
Because, and the reason it was there was that, so there was an American nuclear submarine base in my hometown. And the reason it was there was because it was during the Cold War, and it was a strategic place to have nuclear submarines based in case the Ruskies, you know, got up to no good or anything
got
like that. Yeah. But they closed the base in, I think, like, 94, because, like, after the Soviet Union fell in 91, they didn't really see the need to spend the money there anymore. So, there we go.
So, here's something super furry related that just popped up. New Milford councilman resigns after furor over furry activities.
Oh no! Because I hope that's not the guy I read about that like was had like a really positive article about. Oh, he's so and so by day, but he has this furry alter ego, and it was.
Yeah, but they found his So Furry account and in his tolerate on the F list style of things, where you like, love, tolerate, or hate. The term rape was in the tolerate category. And so people were like, what the fuck? And it's like, at first reading, it's like, oh shit, they found his F list. That's not good.
No, that's not
good. It's like, good. Having an F list is just bad in general. Don't do it. Like, it's useful if you RP and are completely found, but like, if you're into some weird shit and people connected to your RL, they're gonna be like, look at this freak! Even though they're probably, like, spanking rent boys on the weekend, too. Because mm-hmm. hypocrisy is the name of the game.
Yeah.
And I just opened this, and it's like, it wants me to fucking take a survey instead of showing me the fucking article. But basically, it boils down to this guy, I retweeted from my account, that he was a city councilman, and he writes furry stories, and he basically got forced to resign because of it.
It's fucked up.
Because of his F-list. Yeah, just one of the unfortunate things is, like, yeah, being a furry should totally not impact your run for office, and what you write in your private time shouldn't have any bearing on how you can be a city councilman, but...
Yeah.
Unfortunately, our puritanical government...
Because apparently your ability to make decisions about dog walking laws... It's completely...
Well, that may be impacted, I suppose. If you're into pup play, it's a different kind of dog walking.
Yeah, don't walk your pups in the city limits. during, yeah, it's just not cool.
What if it turns out the guy made an impassioned speech, like he filibustered something in city council on the subject of being able to walk your human pups?
Well, that still sucks.
It sucks. I mean... And I've also heard about people that... It was discovered that they were active in the BDSM community in, like, a totally safe, sane, and consensual way. But because America is puritanical as fuck, it ruined people's political careers or lost jobs and shit like that. And it's,
yep.
That shit ain't right.
Yep.
What you do in your time, as long as it's not... you know, truly non-consensual,
yeah.
You know, should...
If it's legal...
Yeah.
Basically, it's like, yo, is it legal? Okay, cool.
And even I hesitate to use the word legal, because, like, if you're, like, smoking weed on your off hours, it's sort of, like, seriously, that means you can't make informed decisions, you know? That's ridiculous.
Reefer madness!
Yeah. But whatever, man. It should be legalized. And I say that as not a pothead. I'm just like, it's legalized.
Stupid.
It's dumb that it's not. And I was having a conversation with a friend recently about how this whole thing started because of hemp. Actually, this was really interesting. So it was apparently
not
one
just
of the
hemp.
Big...
I'll show you this afterwards. But yeah, it's not just hemp. There's more to it than that.
Apparently, back in the day, one of these big newspaper magnates that owned a printing company that printed their own newspapers. Basically, somebody overseas discovered a way to make paper out of hemp that cost a fraction of the price. And it was, you know, just as good quality and everything. So in order to protect this guy's business, he lobbied all the local governments, Congress, and everything to basically make hemp illegal so that, like, nobody could undercut him on the paper printing business. And this was back in, like, the 20s or something like that. I don't remember the specifics. But, like, that's why, like, hemp shit was illegal for the longest time. And only now are some areas starting to even decriminalize, not even smoking weed, but actually using hemp to make stuff. So that's partially how this whole let's make weed illegal bullshit started.
There's also a thing where basically, so another thing is about that same time is that one of the federal bureaus was around the Prohibition era, mm-hmm. was apparently losing money to the whole, they were losing funding, and so they basically needed a new demon to mm-hmm. to hunt, and hemp came up slash weed came up with well, we can kind of use this as our new demon, because I try to remember, it was an article I read the other day, but because it was also brought up by Mexicans, and because it came up from South America as part of a big product, mm-hmm. and, well, Mexican violence and all this other stuff that came, and it was kind of a way to, let's find a new demon so that we can basically keep ourselves employed. Mm-hmm. And that was also part and parcel with the whole thing.
Wow.
Yeah, so, hey.
What else you got on the list?
So here's a interesting subversion. So there is a new South Park video game coming. The difficulty slider is interesting because the game, the difficulty slider, basically the harder you make it, the darker your character's skin. Mm-hmm. So if you want to play the game in hard mode, you're playing as a black kid. Because basically Cartman, we've talked about how basically being a white male is essentially life on easy mode relative to yeah. many, many things.
There's actually John Scalzi that first said that.
Yeah.
He got a ton of shit, but he wrote an article.
And basically it's in the game, Cartman comments, "Don't worry, this doesn't affect combat, just every other aspect of your whole life." And it's one of those, huh, that's interesting.
That's weird for South Park to take a kind of progressive viewpoint yeah. on something.
And then,
well, they do. They just poke fun at it at the same time. I mean,
South Park in good, but it's interesting to see them do this in the game as a commentary on basically, yeah, because it doesn't affect combat necessarily, but it affects how characters talk to you, deal with you, interact with you, how the cops affect and deal with you, the amount of money you can make. Like, yeah, that's be interesting to see. And then the further end, you can choose male, female, or other for your gender.
Yeah.
And also if your character is cis or trans. And that probably further modifies how the game treats you.
Huh.
So that's one of those that came up today, and I'm like, that's really weird. That's cool. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Mm-hmm. And I'm also still not really interested in playing a South Park video game. Even though it's the last one was good, I'm just not interested in South Park.
Yeah.
It also kind of reminds me of that parody article about World War II fighting first-person shooter games, where, like, they had a centrist mode where
the Nazis just kept winning.
Where you had the option to stop and talk to the Nazi and try to convince him of his evil ways.
Find the article, cause
but the Nazis weren't bound by the same conditions, so they could just shoot you.
Yeah. It's on point and clickbait. Nazis always win in Call of Duty's new centrist multiplayer mode, says players. Activision are standing firm in the face of angry player feedback from the beta test weekend of Call of Duty World War II, claiming that the new centrist multiplayer mode is working as intended despite Nazis always winning. The controversial new mode is coming under heavy criticism for the way it forces all soldiers on the Allied side to approach every Nazi soldier and open a dialogue with them prior to any combat starting. Once each individual Nazi has been fully interrogated as to their beliefs, motivations, and values in an extensive 30-minute conversation, the Allied player must then attempt to debunk them through a series of reason and logic quick-time events. If the Allied player succeeds at the debunking phase, the Nazi player is removed from the game. But if they fail, the Allied player is converted into a Nazi and joins their team instead. While this whole mechanic might sound like a reasonable foundation for a thriving democracy so far, what really has the pro-gaming community riled up is that the Nazi players have no such restrictions and can just shoot anybody with their guns at any time. The game modes suck balls, explained programmer Neil Clayton. It's not fun to play and it's not fun to be part of in any capacity. Just thinking about it is making me angry. For their part, however, Activision says that players just need to give the centrism experiment some time. We're confident that the centrist mode will deliver great results, said an Activision spokesperson in a statement. We understand it feels like the Nazis are winning, but they are vulnerable to facts and logic, so we encourage Allied players to brush up on their debating skills and just keep engaging with a genocidal racist in good faith.
God, I hope they actually do something like that. That's hilarious. That would be hilarious. A
funny in theory mod, but then everybody would want to play a Nazi. Alright, so we do have one email, because we're already past an hour and a half, or at an hour and a half.
So let's read that.
A raw recording, because I'll edit this down. I'm just going to read it real quick. Notcast@gmail.com is our...
Raw recording. I thought you said raw recording.
No. Raw recording, because I edit this show, in case you couldn't tell. So, hello, Naughty Notcast. Cookie again after not writing in for a few months. After a while, I sort of got back into drawing and filling my sketchbooks with weird doodles and whatnot. But I have a lot of trouble with getting motivated to do so. Some days I'll pick up any pen or pencil and just doodle some stuff on a piece of paper, but most days I work day in and day out. Every time afterwards, though, I just get really tired and have a lack of motivation to even try to draw. Is there a way to cure my lack of motivation and help me get back on track? Thank you and stay awesome. From your friendly neighborhood Fox Dragon Cookie Chip.
If you find it, let me know.
Draw through the pain! No, God, seven
years. A lot of it basically boils down to consistency and doing it every day, even if it's a little bitty, shitty drawing. Because when you fall out of a habit, it's really hard to pick it back up, as I have found when it came to, like, doing YouTube videos. And because I did it consistently for over a year, almost 2 years, and then just kind of was like, this is going nowhere, and stopped, and got out of the habit.
And also you had family shit out the woo-wah.
That was true, too. But still, it was something that I'd done as a habit for a couple of years and then just stopped, even if it never got me any real amount of success. But it was fun to do. I just fell out of the habit. So basically it's picking it up, doing it, making a video or two, or drawing or doodling, trying to do something on a page. Like, set a goal for yourself. Doodle something on a page in your sketchbook for a month.
Yeah.
You know.
I've heard the same advice for writers as well. Like, write something. Even if you only squeeze out like 50 or 100 words, if you're able to do that every day consistently, then eventually you have a longer work. And you have a habit. And even if they're shitty words, that's what editing's for.
Yeah. Like, do you think this episode goes out without editing? Well, they used to, but...
We got better.
We got better. Let's just do it.
Do it!
Where you just do something each day, and...
Do it, furry!
Oh, and sometimes I find with me drawing, like, the first couple come out really kind of, eh. And it can take a while to kick over from, like, left side brain to right side brain and back again. Sometimes the first couple, whatever, of a session, it just doesn't come out until you've done it for a while. And I mean, like, within the same session. Because I don't know how many times I've started, it's like, man, this isn't coming out the way I want it to. And sometimes it takes warm-up before you go fully on and, you know, you're rocking it and rolling it, so.
Every great artist started somewhere, and that somewhere is a shitty doodle that they would never show you in a million years.
Oh god, my ones were high school.
Yeah, I found a cache of old drawings from, like, my early teens at my parents' place.
This is my Sonic OC!
No, I never had a Sonic OC, but it was like...
Your shame does not go that deep.
It was like trench coat furries with guns and Team Fortress, original Team Fortress, and Team Fortress 2 fan art, the furries, and whatnot. Sketch references off of Anime Girls. I used to have a little... back when art websites didn't exist, I had my own tripod site that had my art on it.
Holy shit, tripod.
Yeah, I had a tripod, too.
It doesn't exist anymore, unfortunately.
I had a GeoCities site.
Angel Fire.
But it was just one of those things that I used to do it, I had a habit, and then I stopped. and it's just hard to pick back up. So basically, it's just a matter of being consistent. And it's one of those things that when I've picked up a pencil and doodled in a sketchbook, they come out being all right. And it's just a matter of consistency and finding a motivation to draw what, you know, what I want to draw. This is going to be the wrap up, the end of the show, if we don't have anything else.
And I won't be on the next couple weeks between various things, like going out to visit like my folks over our recording nights, things like that.
Cool.
So I will not be around for a little bit.
That's okay. And then, of course, we have probably... We have six shows before we won't be doing a show because I'll have my convention.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be a little busy that Thursday and that weekend. And so, you know, it's coming up on a busier time of year, but that's all right.
Mm-hmm. You know. Because Nightmare Nights is coming.
Yep, the last one.
The nightmare is coming.
The nightmare is ending.
Because
I'm done with that shit. Not yet, but I'm, you know.
But you're close.
I'm close.
Literally counting the days.
Yep. And so.
Is this counter for when Nightmare Night starts? No, this counter is for when Nightmare Night ends. And convention flip.
So you can contact us, notcast@gmail.com. Contact us on Tumblr, notcast.tumblr.com or notcast.com. We'll take you to the same place. Go contact, follow me on Twitter and see all my spicy, spicy takes at Saverin Drake.
You can find me at Fuzzwolf on the Twitter. You can also contact Notcast by blowing into the nearest hookah.
Sending up smoke signals.
Yes, we will get your emails.
Nice.
You can find me on Twitter as Chimera, KHYMAERA. And Notcast also has a Patreon, notcast@patreon. We're consistent that way.
Yeah, patreon.com/notcast. And you get your episodes day early at minimum, higher quality.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to, like, sit down and focus on doing, like, maybe some video stuff. It's like Fuzz and I did the Night in the Woods playthrough.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe do some sort of unlisted YouTube videos for the patrons or something like that.
Oh, that'd be fun.
That could be fun.
Just a matter of sitting down and working on our schedules to do it.
All right.
So, on that note,
good night.
And fat clouds.